Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. You can promote your confessional Lutheran church and support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining our congregational sponsorship program, the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. You'll find an informational flyer on the support page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline, the Issues Etc. 300. I have to say, I don't really think about it on a Sunday morning when I enter church. My mind is on other things, on the liturgy, on the readings, on the people that I meet and see there. I don't think about security. I don't think about that kind of security that immediately pops to mind when you hear about a church shooting. What kind of security does the church need? Does it need its parishioners to just bring their own firearms to protect us against the random maniac who might enter and start shooting? The stories are tragic, but the question as to what churches ought to do about their security, how old is that story? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin on this Thursday afternoon. Joining us to talk about media coverage of church security, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
How old is this church security story, and what angles have the media used to cover it?
Well, it's really changed a lot just in the last couple of years because of the general uptake in mass gun violence anyway. And, of course, a lot of that's linked to terrorism. But I think if there are church leaders, synagogue leaders, who want to think about this, you really can go a long way back if you want to follow this. And the kind of the eras we've gone through, I think, are helpful to denominational leaders who want to think about this in a kind of a sane, calm manner, as opposed to just responding to the latest round of headlines. I wrote my column about it this week, of course, and I've written a lot about the, and so did Bobby Ross Jr. of Get Religion. We both have written a lot about the coverage of church security issues because we've just gone through another wave, a boomlet of coverage. But at the same time, I just came from speaking to a class here at the King's College in New York City, speaking to a class about editorial writing, and they asked me to bring a column that was I thought was really personal. And I pulled a column out from a long time ago, so far ago it predates the internet. And it was a column from 1993. And as I worked through it with students, I realized that it was a column about church security issues. But in the late 80s and early 90s, the dominant issue in church security was child abuse. Child abuse and whether or not you needed to do background screening on anyone in your church who came in touch with very young children, whether that was through daycare, nursery workers, Sunday school even. The question was, how much of a security infrastructure do we need to help protect our children? That was the issue way back then. So how old would you have been in about 1990?
Oh, in 1990, I would have been 26.
Okay. So you remember a lot of that. You were entering ministry. Do you remember the rising concerns about child security and child safety?
Absolutely. I had pastoral experience having followed one of my predecessors where that issue was huge there because he violated his vows with respect to that issue.
And remember also that the Roman Catholic scandal of child abuse burst into, of the many times it has become a big issue in national media, it began with a case in Louisiana that was back in the 80s. And then you had all kinds of spectacular stuff on Oprah and everywhere else about whether or not there were satanic cults that we're trying. You know, so anyway, but that in its own way was a church security issue. The issue of church security linked to guns really bursts into the national consciousness with a crime in 1999 in Fort Worth, Texas, with the Wedgewood Baptist shooting, which was when a very angry man, someone angry at the church, probably mentally ill, but whatever, he decided to walk into a Baptist church in Fort Worth. He deliberately picked the youth group meeting and walked into a prayer rally and opened fire. And what got everybody about this one was the randomness of it. Now, if you want to go back even further, it's obvious that there's a long history of church violence in America. If you throw in the bombing of churches during the civil rights era, that certainly would be considered a church security issue. You have a long history of anti-Semitic activity affecting synagogues. So we've had these categories that we could kind of stick a label on things. Oh, that's an anti-Semitism case. Oh, that's a racism case. Oh, that's a work of terrorism. What's begun to really wake everybody up is, oh, we don't know what that is. That seems random. Or, oh, that's a dispute within a family. It's a family violence case. But why did they choose to come to church and shoot everybody else too? So what I would say is Wedgewood Baptist in 99 is when a lot of people related to denominations like the Southern Baptist Convention, the United Methodist Church, Missouri Synod Lutherans, various denominations began to say, this could happen just about anywhere. And we went on, we had some megachurch shootings in places like Colorado Springs, Colorado, you know, and other places. And now it's back in the news again, and it's easy to think of this as, oh, this is new. No, the issue of church violence, church security is not new. Sutherland Springs has put it back on page one, and the fact that Sutherland Springs came along so close after the mass violence in Las Vegas, in this case, even more than normal, it got linked to debates about gun violence and gun control, which is the operative political issue that gets pulled in on this. So that's a quick history. This is not a new problem. It's not a new debate. But it's beginning to sink in more and more that there isn't a church anywhere in America that some angry person couldn't decide, I'm going to go in there and shoot a bunch of people and be on the evening news. Or this is a soft target where I might even be able to kill a bunch of people and maybe even get away. Church violence, I think, is now in the national psyche as a problem, probably to stay for some time.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about church security, the media coverage thereof, and church violence. What are the tick-off-the-boxes questions that the media want answered initially with these stories? We'll answer that question with Terry after this.
The Reformation and Luther definitely moved the Western world toward the idea of religious freedom for the individual conscience.
Pastor Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, speaking at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
Be proud of that, for Pete's sake. You know, this crazy world thinks everybody should be free to define him, her, or their, or itself in any way they want. That is crazy. But it was the Lutheran Reformation that advanced, initially, enormously, the idea that the matter of one's beliefs is a matter between God and the individual, not the state.
You can listen to President Harrison's presentation and all of the speakers at our 2017 Making the Case conferences on an audio DVD. We'll send it to you for a $300 year-end tax-deductible donation. Look for the DVD logo at issuesetc.org.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Do you have a hard time finding Christian greeting cards and gifts that aren't either sappy or theologically suspect? Ad Crucem offers the perfect combination of art and the truth of the scriptures with beautiful and reverent greeting cards and gifts. Deliver the true comfort of the gospel, Christ crucified for sinners, to family and friends with Ad Crucem. ADCRUCEM.com. Confessing the faith through art and word. AdCrucem.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about media coverage of church violence and church security. Terry Mattingly is our guest, senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. You can listen to Terry's presentation at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference, Making the Case for News Discernment, on an audio DVD of our two 2017 Making the Case conferences. We'll send it to you for a year-end tax-deductible contribution of $300 to Issues Etc. Just look for the conference audio DVD logo at issuesetc.org or make your $300 check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Almost 20 hours of teaching and preaching on an audio DVD from this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case conferences. Terry, what are the basic kind of tick-off-the-boxes questions that the media want to answer regarding these church shootings?
Well, of course, it's the why question and who, what, when, where, why, and how. Why did the person do this? In the case of Sutherland Springs, this pretty much appears to be a family violence case, a division within a family. It appears the gunman went to the church to kill his mother-in-law, perhaps his estranged wife, but they weren't there, at which point that's where things go off the rail. The logical thing would have been to have left and go try to kill the mother-in-law elsewhere, but instead he literally puts a bullet, either fatal or wounded, every single person in that church. Why? At this point, people are not sure. We do know from his Facebook page that he was violently anti-Christian and was mad at the church and had trolled church members and trolled online former friends from high school who knew him when he was a Baptist young man and trolled people in the Sutherland Springs community. We knew that there was a lot of anger there. Now, in this case, because it followed so closely on Vegas, it leaped immediately into the issues of gun control. Now, it was a complex case in that you had a villain with a gun, and in Sutherland Springs, you had an NRA-licensed gun safety teacher with a rifle who wounds this man and runs him off. And we'll never know whether he intended to go elsewhere and kill others. We'll never know whether he intended to get more ammunition, go back in, and finish off the wounded. We'll never know any of that because he was run off by another guy with a rifle. And so now you have a debate from both sides. I mean, you have Joe Biden the other day saying that this man who's being called the Good Samaritan with the gun, you have Joe Biden, former vice president, saying, well, maybe this guy shouldn't have had a gun. Maybe the Good Samaritan shouldn't have had a gun. So it all gets into an argument about guns. Now, what I think is fascinating is the experts in church security don't think that this is primarily an issue about guns. Now, they think that any church at this moment in time probably needs a couple of off-duty police officers or people in their church who have up-to-the-minute training in the handling of concealed weapons that who need to serve as kind of a bare minimum security line. When I was interviewing this band from the Sheepdog Seminars team, when I was talking to Jimmy Meeks about this, Jimmy Meeks is an interesting guy. He's both a Southern Baptist pastor, but he's also a retired police officer. There was 11 years in his life where he was simultaneously a pastor and a police officer specializing in hostage negotiations. Isn't that an interesting calling? Jimmy Meeks thinks the single most important things are twofold. One, you have to have in your church an understanding that if there are anger management issues in your church, if there are family disputes, if there is depression, if there are medical conditions that can lead to extreme anger, you're going to have enough confidence in the confidentiality of your church to be able to warn the pastor and warn two or three people who are in charge of security. And you're going to have to trust them to keep that information confidential. You know, I had never even thought of that level of the confidentiality thing involving problems within families. But, I mean, how could you share that with people who are at the front door? You know, if my Uncle Jake shows up, don't let him in. He is furious with my husband right now. I fear violence. Would you trust someone in your church to handle that information? But this guy stressed one of the quotes in my column. You know, he just says over and over, you've got to wake up. You've got to realize that guns are not the answer. You need some sort of overarching security issue, security plan. And if it gets past words, if it gets past angry words, there's a quote in here somewhere. He says, if it gets to guns, it's too late. Most of these problems in the church have to be headed off before it gets to guns. Now, the second thing that reporters assume is, since they assume that churches are all right-wing conservative organizations, or most of them are, and especially they are if they're interested in guns, they assume that the church security people want everybody in the church to be packing heat. I mean, the pastor of First Baptist Dallas said the other day that he said a third of the members of his congregation on Sunday morning are probably carrying a concealed weapon. It's important to realize, though, that church security people don't think that's the answer. Let me just read one quote from my column that sums this up. He said, there are many people carrying guns who have no right to be doing that. They are dangerous. Dangerous to other people and dangerous to their families. Then he said, when a threat arrives in church or something or else, quote, people don't rise to the level of whatever ability they think they have. They sink to the level of their training. You don't need someone who was in the military a long time ago bringing a weapon to church when they haven't taken a shot on a range in 20 years or gone to a safety course ever. Think about that. The answer is not having lots of members in your congregation with a pistol inside their sport coat. He said that if they pull those guns out and start firing because somebody has come into their church with a weapon, as he put it, good things are not going to happen. But if that person gets out of a van dressed in black with a bulletproof vest and a rifle and has to go like 50 yards from your parking lot to the front door, and you have somebody in your parking lot who's standing watch all the way through the service, at all times during the church activities of Sunday morning or whatever, and that person sees the danger coming and gets off a few shots and calls the police and maybe either drives the man off or at least slows him down, that would be a different situation. I didn't have room to get this in my column, but he made the interesting comment. He said there are times when your issue is whether two people get shot or 200 get shot. He said, has your church seriously sat down and talked about that? he has found not many church leaders have, that pastors are scared stiff of scaring their people stiff. Does that make sense to you?
It makes a lot of sense, because I imagine even raising the conversation would... I'm speaking of a pastor who has spent the last 30 years almost in congregations in the Midwest, which isn't Texas, but I was raised in Texas, so I have that sensibility as well. What I've discovered, Terry, is that, or I think what would happen, is if you raise the question of preemptive security, having a plan that if there is a conflict in the congregation, we call this guy and he comes and he stations himself at and a partner at the two entrances and exits, just to be on the safe side until the conflict has passed, I think what would happen is people would stay home. And that's the pastor's worst fear, is that people don't show up.
Yeah. There are even people who fear that churches on the left who are putting things up on the by their parking lot or on their front door that say, this is a gun-free zone. We believe totally that no one here should have a gun. No one here has a gun. We trust God. We have no security at all. There are people now who can say, what signal is that sending? The first time we have a major shooting in a place like that, I mean, is that church liable for basically saying, come and get us? There's no easy way out of this discussion if you honestly believe that a guy with a military rapid-fire weapon can walk into a tiny town of 500 people in Texas where people don't even lock the front doors of their houses and put a bullet in every single member of a church, going out of his way, by the way, to shoot children.
Terry, we've got about 30 seconds here.
Oh, okay.
How so far would you assess the media coverage of the Texas shooting?
I think they need to talk to more people, but they're off to it. This is a real story, and we have seen some real coverage. What I fear is that they're going to drop it again. Just like all the previous waves, it's going to be good for like a week of talking about it, and that nobody's going to do the follow-up coverage that gets you to the sane, low-key, respected security leaders who are saying stuff that makes sense. If you just leave it at the everybody needs a gun in church, it's just going to go out of control again, and nobody's going to learn anything from this tragic situation.
Terry Mattingly, a senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you very much for being our guest.
Glad to be here again.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll get a medical perspective on the opioid crisis from Dr. Brian Peterson, chief medical examiner for Milwaukee County. It's This Week in Pop American Christianity. Pastor Chris Roseborough will be with us, and we'll play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Hello, this is Pastor Kevin Golden of Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, Missouri. The saints at Village Lutheran are proud to be part of the Issues Etc. 300, sharing in their Christ-centered, cross-focused proclamation of the gospel. If you find yourself in St. Louis, join us on Sundays at 8:15 and 10:45 for the Divine Service, 9:30 for Bible study and Sunday school, as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. Or visit us on the web at www.villagelutheranchurch.org.